Okay, we are going to start sheet 49. Okay, sheet 49 is the beginning of a discussion about halacha lemaaseh, halacha lemaaseh. And we need to really understand, first of all, why the Shulchan Aruch was written, the reactions to the Shulchan Aruch from different places in the world, and get a little bit of a feeling for where the Jewish people are holding at this stage in Jewish halachic history. I think I ended last time by saying to you that if you took a snapshot of the Jewish people all around the world, but really they were only in Europe and North Africa and a little bit in the Middle East, if you could took a snapshot of the Jewish people in the year 1300, it's a settled picture. The Jews in North Europe, the Ashkenazim, are living in countries that they'd lived in for 500, 600, 700 years, davening in shuls that they davened in for 700 years, with minhagim, understandings of the Gemara, the Talmud that they'd had and they'd developed, and fact that they followed, and they were well established. Based Rashi, and before Rashi, Rabbeinu Gershom, etc., etc. If you look at the Sephardim in Spain and North Africa, again, they're living in communities in Cordoba, in Toledo, in places that they've lived in for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And they have a clear minhag, a clear established, settled perspective. Between the years of 1300 and 1500, all of that was turned on its head. Okay, can you just open the door and tell them to just be quiet, please? Or close the door, just 1 second. If you look at the year 1500, everything has changed. What has changed? So the Jews in Ashkenaz have been pushed town by town, country by country. They've been pushed eastwards into Poland, to Russia, into Lithuania, into Latvia, into places where nobody really lived. I mean, there were still pagans living in Latvia at this stage. They were refugees. They were starting new communities in places that they had no rabbonim previously. If you take the Sephardi communities, then they were ejected from Spain the 100 years before the expulsion from Spain, from 1391 already till 1492. So there was a downhill spiral. There was a downhill movement that the Jewish communities were under significant pressure. There was a lot of pogroms, forced conversions. The Inquisition was started. The Inquisition, of course, was aimed against, not against Jews, but against who? Again, conversos, people who had converted from Judaism to Christianity that they suspected of really being secret Jews. Because, of course, what the Spanish achieved by forcing all the Jews to convert, which is actually they made things a lot worse. Because now, instead of just throwing all the Jews out and having a country which was free of Jews, which was Judenrein, what they now had is a country which was full of Jews, living as Christians, who they didn't really trust. In fact, everybody else in Europe mockingly said that actually Spain was all Jewish. The Christians in Spain were all Jewish, or you didn't know who was Jewish and who wasn't Jewish, so then they turned in on themselves, and they were absolutely paranoid about the fact that everybody was really Jewish, and they'd let them in, and how could they have done that, etc. So the Jews who left went all over the world, literally. They went to North America, they went to South America, they went through Europe, they went to Turkey, they went to North Africa, etc., etc. And the snapshot that you can take in the year 1500, if you like, was something radically different from 1300. Sorry, I can't teach with that noise. So what you have is you have a refugee picture. You have people in towns from hundreds of different places together, Ashkenazim, Sephardim, etc. You have a lack of Masorah. You have a, like we had in the 20th century. If you read the article, Rupture and Reconstruction, that we talked about, by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the fact that the Shoah and the assimilation in Eastern Europe just tore through the concepts of Masorah. So you have the same thing in the 15th century as well. So if you take a snapshot by the beginning of the 16th century, what are people going to do? How are they going to rule? How are they going to paskin? You take a town somewhere in Belgrade, in Serbia, whatever it is, there are people from loads of different places. You ask them, what's your tradition? What's your minhag? It's all a big mess. A little bit like we find now in Israel, where Nusach and Minhag is all, do you eat kidneys or do you not eat kidneys? And if you eat kidneys, are they the ones that you didn't eat in America, or are they the ones you don't eat here? Do you eat sunflower or not? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's caused by people from lots of different places all coming together at the same time. So at this point in Jewish history, there was a feeling that something has to change. Ah, hello. That something has to move forwards. That there has to be a new system. In addition, there was a messianic feeling. Sarah walks in just as I get to the messianic feeling, which is quite in character. There was a feeling in the Jewish world as a whole that this must be the beginning of Mashiach. Look what's happened. The Eastern European Jews have been subject to pogroms for hundreds of years. The Spanish Jews, the golden age of Spain that was 300 years before, has just exploded. Didn't happen overnight. But now the Jews have been thrown around with the unthinkable, the expulsion of Spain. Mashiach must be on the way. And therefore people turned around to new mechanisms to try and kickstart that messianic process. There was a group of rabbis living in Sfat, who most of whom were from either North Africa or Spain, and they turned to this halacha of the Rambam that I brought in number one and said, look, this is the time, Higia Hazman, to begin the Sanhedrin again. Because the Rambam writes that since we have no Sanhedrin today, how can we ever have Mashiach? How can we ever get together the group of people who will ratify the Mashiach, that will agree to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, etc., etc.? We need a Sanhedrin. We can't have a Sanhedrin because we've lost the Smicha. So what do? We can regain, we can restart the Smicha through this process. So the Rambam introduces halacha number one. It says, Nirin Li, which is always an interesting way for the Rambam to start. Meaning, I can't find a source for this. I can't promise that you'll find this out, but I think this is the great halacha. Nirin Li Advorim, She'im Iskimu Kol HaChachamim Sheva Eretz Yisrael Linois Dayanim. If all the rabbis in Israel got together, because Chutz La'aretz for these purposes is not relevant, because you can't have a Sanhedrin in Chutz La'aretz. But if all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael got together to appoint Dayanim, the Lismoich Osam, and to give them Smicha, Hari Elu Smuchim, they will have the real Smicha, not the Smicha that we give today, which is at the end of the day just a heta to the Rav, so that we're confirming that he's got, you know, enough qualifications to rule in Halacha. The modern day Smicha started after the Black Death. After the Black Death in Europe, there were so many people died, so many in the Jewish community, there was a mass lack of rabbis, and people were being appointed to be rabbis who really weren't up to the job. So they introduced some basic standard-like tests that you have to do in order to become a quote-unquote rabbi. But that's nothing to do with the original smicha that was existed in the Beis HaMikdash and the Sanhedrin. But these people will now be samuchim. And they can do all the things that a real smicha, a real Sanhedrin can do. Dine knasos, to punishments if they need to, corporal punishment, capital punishment. And they can give smicha to other people as well. So why, if this is possible, why were they so upset? Why were the rabbis so bothered? Chazal were bothered we lost smicha. Let them start again, like the Rambam says. Why was this such a crisis before and maybe not now? Says the Rambam, a geographical reason. Because the Jewish people were just too scattered. They just couldn't all get agree. They weren't physically there in one place and they weren't able to agree. That's the only reason why they couldn't have the smicha. And now, said the rabbis in fact, now that we have a new community in Eretz Yisrael, we have a new yishuv Eretz Yisrael, people that came from Spain and other places, and now that we've been through what they felt was Gog and Magog, this incredible upheaval, and surely this must be the time Higiyaz Man LeGeula, now is the time to put this Rambam into action. Let's get together the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, let's create Smicha, and let's move forward from there, and we'll see where it leads.
Most depressing thing.
Why?
Because, like, they so strongly believed it was the time of Mashiach, and it's not even remotely close.
Correct.
So, like, we so strongly believe
that
we're in a time of Mashiach,
but there are differences. There are similarities and differences in all of these things. This was perhaps the first in the modern era of expectations of imminent Geula, which came to nothing. Or maybe not nothing, because they did produce some things, maybe not what they thought they were going to produce. Shabtai Svi, which we'll get to soon, next time probably, is another massive sort of missed opportunity, if you like, a false expectation that we thought Mashiach was going to be here and actually he didn't come. But the Shabtai Svi debacle actually resulted in other things which have created modern day Jewry, which we'll see next time. So yes, it didn't happen the way they expected it, so what happened in the end? So I brought you the whole story at the back there, you should read it on your own. I extracted an article from Rabbi Yirmiyahu Kaganov, just one second, where he goes to, you can find the original, I gave you the quote online as to where to find the original. Basically, it all fell apart because of politics. The rabbis in Jerusalem were not prepared to accept the, if you like, Beis Din of the rabbis in Sfat. There were a big people who didn't agree to this project, and it all fell apart, and the Haskamah they were hoping for, the agreement they were hoping for, never really happened. But they did initially, Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, if you've been to Sfat, and you've been to the Beirav synagogue, okay, Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, who was a big figure there, he did actually initiate what he called a smicha, and he gave it to Rabbi Yosef Karo. And Rabbi Yosef Karo gave it to other people, and when the whole project fell apart and they didn't have a Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yosef Karo later in life said, you know something? So we're not going to have a Sanhedrin. But let's have something else bimkom the Sanhedrin. Let's have a Shulchan Aruch. Let's at least have a Sefer which is a psak halacha for the entire Jewish world. So on a certain level, the Shulchan Aruch was a response to a messianic need. It wasn't itself a messianic project, but you have to understand it in the context of the times, what people were trying to do and what they were able eventually to do. Sorry, I had a question. I've come to you, Dion. Yeah.
Was it, I have two questions actually. One, was the messianic feeling, was it like a global
Jewish feeling? Or was it just for the rabbis in France? There was, the expulsion from Spain exploded all over the world. It was a global feeling. And there, Sfat does happen to be a place where there was a resurgence of Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And that went along, and the Arizal ended up there as well, etc. So that was a place where it was really focused.
Uh-huh. And the rabbis in Jerusalem, is it because they said it's not the right time?
So I'm not getting into the whole thing now. You have to look in the article, read the article, read around it, find out what it was. Was it principle? Was it politics? Was it personalities? What was it? A mixture of all of them, which was driving which? How does rabbinic politics work today? Is it based on principle and ideas? Is it based on, you know, covered?
No, but I'm just curious, was there any rabbis who used this, who were sort of like, who said, like,
right, we are not able to push the. So again,
were there any rabbis who had that opinion, or was it?
I haven't read into it over the last couple of days, weeks. Have a look at the article. We can look at it in more detail. I'm not going to get into it now. Yes.
It might be off topic, but I just find it conceivable that we're going to have a Sanhedrin again. They can't require all the rabbis
everywhere
to agree on.
In Eretz Israel.
But still, there's a lot of people and a lot of different opinions. They're going to come to the Sanhedrin. Like,
Mashiach can come without a Sanhedrin. You only need Aliyah
HaNavi to do it. Okay, no, that's a good question. That's not so posh.
No, but doesn't it also say in the Gemara that when he comes, he'll come to the Beis Din?
Look, the Rambam says in the Halachas of Mashiach at the end of Hilchas Mamrim, in Hilchas Malachim, sorry, the Rambam says that all of the Masuras that we have on Mashiach are unclear. He says maybe Eliyahu will come before Mashiach. Maybe he won't. He seems to say maybe it'll work this way, maybe it'll work that. Will the Beis HaMikdash be built before Mashiach comes? Or will Mashiach come and build the Beis HaMikdash?
But don't we need a way to verify who Mashiach actually is?
Do we? Maybe there'll be a... If Mashiach is going to be a Navi, maybe we can verify it through the normal process of Nebuah.
But there are opinions that say that we have the surface, like,
correct, and there are opinions that say that the whole thing will come down from the sky as a nace. So there was, without getting into the whole messianic, Rabbi Katz is giving a shiur tomorrow on different perspectives on the Medinat Yisrael. This obviously is a very live debate, and has been for the last 100 years, certainly the last 70 years, as to what is the status of the current Kibbutz Galiot, State of Israel. Is it the beginning of Geula? Is it Geula itself, defined how we was to define it? Is it just a positive political outcome for the Jewish people? Is it a negative? All of these things you can debate, but not for now. But just so that you're aware, historically, the context of the Shulchan Aruch comes out of the great Smicha debate of the 16th century. That's very important for you to know, for starters. In terms of Rav Yosef Karo, he was right at the epicenter of this whole thing. He was born in Spain just 6 years before they were, 4 years, sorry, before they were expelled. He was a little boy. He fled with his family. They went to Portugal, and then they were expelled from Portugal again when he was only 9 years old. So, as a young child, you can imagine that he's already been through a lot of real emotional, psychological, personal expulsion crises And therefore this weighs very strongly on him. Obviously I'm not a psychologist and we're not here to psychoanalyze the Shulchan Aruch, but it's impossible for him not to have been affected by this in this way. He ended up in Egypt eventually, and he studied, he went to Turkey for a while. He didn't go to Cairo. He was in Egypt. His name doesn't mean Cairo. It's from the word caro in Spanish. What does caro mean? In modern Italian, or cara, or caro?
Dear.
Precious, expensive. It derives directly from the Jewish word yakar, okay? Which is exactly the same word. Many words in Latin and Greek came directly from Hebrew. This is clearly one of them. And therefore, of Yosef Caro, that's where the name comes from. It doesn't come from Cairo. He ended up in Egypt, nevertheless, and then he moved to Turkey. He had another very impactful experience. He met there another false prophet, Shlomo Molcho. Shlomo Molcho was a false prophet who some people really believed was, like most false prophets, a false Mashiach. It was a real thing. In the end, he was burnt at the stake publicly. And Rabbi Yosef Caro, as far as I'm aware, was a witness to this. And this also had a major effect. Oh no, he can't have been a witness. He was burnt in Germany. Rabbi Yosef Caro was not in Germany. So he knew about it. And he was in Turkey. And eventually he came to Eretz Israel. In Eretz Yisrael, he went to Svat. He was appointed to the Beit Din of Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav. He received the smicha, like we said before.
By the Goyim or by the Jews?
By the non-Jews. Rav Shlomo Molcho was burned by the non-Jews. The Jews had no power to burn anyone or do anything, certainly not in Germany. He then set about writing the Bet Yosef, which we're going to talk about in a minute, which was his magnum opus, his new work, which he said was going to solve the global Jewish halachic Masorah crisis. Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. After he wrote the Bet Yosef, he summarized it into a work which he called the Shulchan Aruch. Meaning, his main work was the Beit Yosef, which he wrote on the Torah for reasons that we'll see in a minute. He then took the Beit Yosef and he condensed it into a kitzer. Don't get it confused with the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, that came much later, into a shorthand work which you can literally learn every 30 days. He divided it even into 30 parts. So in theory, you could learn the entire Shulchan Aruch and do Chazara on the Shulchan Aruch every 30 days so that you have an overview of practical Jewish law. Shulchan Aruch is only Halacha Lamaisa. He didn't base it on anything in the Rambam, which was Korbanos and Tumah V'Tahara, and he didn't include Yisodei HaTorah and all those Hashkafic ideas. It was just basic Halacha Lamaisa. You get up in the morning, you wash your hands, you daven, etc., 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 and all the other areas which we're going to talk about in a minute. He said, therefore, I want to create a work, we'll read his introduction, which is going to unite the Jewish people in one psak which applies to all. Sfardim, Ashkenazim. It's interesting. I wonder whether they anticipated at this stage the end of the Sfardi-Ashkenazi split. I don't know. But we take it for granted now that 500 years later there are still Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Maybe they felt that there was so much upheaval and that was going to end. Like in Eretz Yisrael, within 100 years from now in the state of Israel. Are there going to be Ashkenazim and Sfardim in the same way that there were and are? Or is that going to change a little bit as well? That's a good question.
There's like a lot of interest.
Now,
yeah. In
the world?
Yeah.
So there are more Ashkenazim than Sephardim because of American Jewry, but that wasn't always the case. There used to be more Sephardim than Ashkenazim.
There are more Sephardim in Israel than
Yeah, for sure, in Israel there are. He died, one second, he died at quite an old age. He lived till he was in his 80s. And he died just before Pesach, and he's buried in Svat. You can go to his grave in Svat. It's in the cemetery down at the bottom in Svat, in the Beis Olam there. He married a number of times. He had two sons. It's interesting. He lived a whole life. He had two sons because most of the children died. I'd only be had his children die, but many children in those days used to die. His third wife, who gave birth to one of his sons, he was already 80. When he had one of the sons. In other words, this idea of having children when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s is a bit strange to us now, but in the old days, based on the posik, that even if you have children when you're young, you should still have children when you're old, because you never know which are good, the ones that are going to really work out. Yes? I'm not saying he wrote the Shulchan of Adam Messianism. I'm saying there was a context there.
Why didn't he include Korbanos stuff if he's so big into like?
Because he wants now to write a book. I don't want to paint the Shulchan Aruch as a rampant messianist. I don't want to do that at all. He must have had, there was a messianic streak for the whole smicha debate to happen. But in terms of the Shulchan Aruch, what he's trying to do is, for now, create something which unites Klal Yisrael.
But himself. Now he's very close to Mashiach, so why is now not...
Okay, you think that. I don't know if he thought that. I don't know if he felt that the halachic process would take 1 year, 5 years, 100 years, 500 years as to how that would work. It's a good question. Maybe he felt the Rambam's already dealt with that. And the Rambam already has the halachas of korbanos and the halachas of tumah and tara, etc. He wants, what he's trying to do is he's trying to unite all the different streams of Judaism in terms of psak of Masorah into one. Yes. We'll get to that next time. Be'ezras Hashem. Okay. Have a look now with me on page number 3, and let's have a look at how he introduces. There's some fascinating things that come out of this little piece in terms of the thinking of the time. We'll talk about the Ramah in a minute. Let's talk about the Ramah in a minute. Look at number 2, please. Source number 2 and on page number 3. I'm going to read this quite fast, but there's some interesting things in it. Al-Kain, Ani Adal Balpi, I am the lowest in my group. He means, this is a humility. He says, who am I? But it's me. I'm the one who has to do it. Yosef Ben Moreno, Rav Ephraim, Ben Moreno, Rav Yosef, Karo. Okay? See, he spells his name with a chubchik, Karo, like that. Kinesi Lashem Tzavakot, I have decided to be zealous, to get up. V'ni'ati Chatzani L'sakel Amesilan, to pave a new path. Okay? V'hiskamti L'chaber Sefer, I decided to write a book. Kolel Kol Dinim Hanohagim, all the relevant halacha l'maisa. B'biyu Sharashayim, with an explanation of where they come. U'motzeihem, and where they lead. Mea Gemara, from the Gemara, im kol chiluke svaros, with all of the different svaros, haposkim of the different authorities, ish loy nedar, I don't want to leave anybody out. V'loy ra'isi la'asoy sefer zeh chibur b'fnei atzmoy, I don't want to write it as a book on its own. He's not talking about the Shulchan Aruch, he's talking about the Beis Yosef. I don't want to write it as a separate book. Kedei shelo yisterech lichpol lichtoiv divrei mi shekadmeini. So I have to write everything that came before me. I don't want to have to start and then reinvent the wheel and start from scratch. I decided to write a commentary to produce this big new analysis on one of the existing well-known books. My first thought, he said, was to base it on the Rambam. I mean, the Rambam is king. You would obviously base it on the Rambam, especially if it's from Spain. The Rambam is the obvious choice. He surely is the most well-known posik in the whole world. Even then he wasn't, certainly is. But I changed my mind. He only brings one view, his view. The Rambam doesn't bring multiple views. I would have had to go create more work for myself, and bring the other poiskim, and therefore, this is where we left last time. I decided to base it on the Arba Turim. Who's the Tur? Who's the Tur? Rav Yaakov Ben Harosh. Okay, but the Tur was the son of the Rosh. The Rosh lived in the end of the 1200s in Germany, and he escaped to Spain with the Tur, his son, Rabbi Yaakov, and he, in the early 1300s, was living in Spain, in northern Spain, as one of the poskim there. I decided to use the Tur. Shechiber Harav Rabbeinu Yaakov ben HaRosh. Ki hu kala roiv deos ha-poskim, because the Tur itself brings multiple opinions. If you read the Tur, I don't know if you've ever studied any of the Tur, he quotes from different people. The Rambam says this, and my father, the Rosh, says this, and Rashi says this, and Rabbeinu Tam says this. So it's already a good base for Rav Yosef Karo to start his work. Now, second paragraph. Nimtza. So now it turns out, if someone has this sefer in front of them, Yusadurim lefanav, they will have organized in front of them, Divrei HaTalmud, the words of the Gemara, in Peirush Rashi, and he's going to give you a list. See which of these people you recognize. Rashi, the Tosfos, the Haran, okay, the Piski HaRif, and the Rif, the HaRosh, and the Mordechai, and the Rambam, the HaGosav, and the people who comment on the Rambam, the HaMagid Mishnah, that's Rabbeinu Vidal on the Rambam, the Rabbeinu Yeruchim, the Seifa HaTrum, the Shifa Le'alekit, the HaRokeach, the Sharidura, the Seifa HaTashbetz, okay, the Seifa HaItzav, the Nimuke Yosef, the Smag, the Smag, the Aruch HaSchaim, the Torah HaBayis, the HaGos HaSheiri, V'seifa manig, v'ha'egur, v'seifa balei ha'nefesh, l'arayved, v'tshuvas ha'rosh, v'ha'rashba, v'ha'ri, v'ha'sheshis, v'ha'rav shimshim, v'ha'tzemach, v'ha'mirikol, v'ha'raykalon, v'tshuvas ha'deshem. So he's done his homework. He's collected books from all over. And by the way, one of the things that the Shulchan Aruch was able to, benefit from, or piggyback on, was the inventing of the printing press. The printing press was invented just before he was born. And by the time he was writing in Eretz Yisrael, there was already a press in Eretz Yisrael, which was in Sfat, which meant that A, he had access to other Sfarim, and B, he was able to get his sefer printed and sent all around the world. Which means that for the really the first time almost in Jewish history, the Shulchan Aruch was on the desk of every major rov in the world within a decade or so after it was written, which was never heard of before. Think how long it takes to copy out books. So the printing press was very important, and he is going to refer to it in a minute. He had access to all of these books. Kol Divrayim, Mevuarim, Hetev, all these things well explained, of B'Ksas, Mekomas, Maamaria, Zohar. And occasionally I'm going to throw in a Zohar or two. You should just know that the Shulchan Aruch, we'll talk about this in a separate shiur, was a very major Kabbalist, of Yosef Karo. He had a regular Chavrusa with a Maggid, with a voice, with a Kabbalistic voice that spoke to him. And he even writes up those conversations in a book, Magid Meisharim. He was a Kabbalist of very, very high level, but he doesn't include that Kabbalah in the Shulchan Aruch very often. Occasionally he quotes the Zohar, but he keeps them very carefully separate, one and the other. You don't find the Shulchan Aruch being filled with the Kabbalistic ideas told to him by the Magid. I once actually got access to the house where Rav Yosef Karo lived, which is not open to the public. The tour guide knew someone who had a key. And in the house of the Shulchan Aruch, there's his like room, there's his kitchen.
They took us when we went to
the flat. Oh, you went into the house or the shul?
Into the house and you saw the cave.
You saw the cave?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. So I actually got to go crawl into the cave and sit in the cave. And that's where he had, so that's where he spoke to the Maggid.
Because Mo knows the family who runs it. So
fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, you're very fortunate, because most people don't get that.
Did they rent the house out? No, they don't rent the house out, but they were given the keys when all the Jews fled from Sfat
right.
in the war.
Right.
They were the only family that stayed, so they got the keys to the house.
Right. I must tell you, even though I'm a Kabbalist Litvak, I don't have strong Kabbalistic leanings. I did feel a certain sense of the weight of history on my shoulders sitting in the cave where Rav Yosef Karo spoke to the Maggid and teaching Torah from my iPod, which is all I had with me there, to a group, teaching Mishnah to a group of people there. So I'm not sure exactly whether Rav Yosef Karo would have approved of me using an iPod or not. I suspect if you ever find a time machine, you go back in history, I advise you do not get out a smartphone and show it to people, you'd probably be burnt as a witch very quickly. They probably wouldn't have been too keen on that then. But it was, anyway, a special moment for me. Then he says in the third paragraph, and he says, please don't, he leans towards something that we're going to see in a minute. Well, Yoiski Kfar Nodisha Harosh Va'am Mordechai, these are all Ashkenazim. Whatever, it's a voice, a Kabbalistic voice. Maybe a Malach, whatever. So the Rosh and the Mordechai and the Smag and the Smak, who are all Balei HaTosfos, okay? The Sefer Truma, the Hagos Maimon, Kulam Nimshachim Achredi VeHaTosfos, they all follow the path of Tosfos. Val HaRoiv, generally. Ulechein Im Ktsas Mekoymas Loi Echtav Dasam. So if I leave out these opinions occasionally, Al Yechad Sheni, please don't think bad of me. You see what's happening here? He's already ready for an attack by the Ashkenazim. Because he's left out some of the Ashkenazi stuff. He says, please don't get upset with me that I left some of this out. Shemei, listen. I am going to bring Tosfos. I don't need to bring all of these other opinions as well. So that's one interesting point. And then he says in the next line, Vehine Bali Adi, I actually got hold of Ktsat Tshuvas HaRashba, some Tshuvas of the Rashba, Ksuvas Be'et Barzel. What's an Et Barzel? A printing press written with an iron pen. Okay? But a ferid betfus. This is, for them, must have been almost like miraculous, this idea of a printed book. I've got hold of these tshuvas of the Rashba, ubetchilasan shehem tshuvas, ubekatzub betchilasan, but it's written in the front of their tshuvas of the Ramban. Which is already flags up one of the interesting problems that happens once you start printing books, which is if you're copying books hand by hand, then you're more likely to make an error because the printing press never lies. It'll print whatever you tell it to print. But if you do make an error, at least it's only in one book. And the next guy won't copy the same error unless he copies your book. Okay? When you have a printing press and you print 10,000 copies of a book, that error is now institutionalized in every book. And you now have to go around rooting out all the errors, which is what they were doing for the next 300 years, trying to go around the Talmuds and the commentaries, trying to find where the different Gersals that got into the printing press. He says, I'm already dealing with this, only 50 years after printing was invented, because I've got a copy of the Tshuva HaRashba, which says at the front that it's the Tshuva HaRamban. So what am I going to call it? So he says, I call it the Tshuva HaRamban, because everyone knows it like that, but actually you'll realize when you start reading it, it's the Tshuva HaRashba, so he's already kind of dealing with the stress from the world of printing, which is interesting. Now, go to the next paragraph, which is where he gets into his philosophy here. The Alabadasi, Sha'achar kol ha'dvarim esok halacha v'achriya bein ha'sforos. I originally thought I was going to pasken between all of these different opinions. Ki zeh tachlis lo'zlanu Torah achas u'mishpat echad. Because I want there to be Torah achas, one Torah, u'mishpat echad, and one rule. But then I saw, if we're going to start being machriya, deciding the din between the poiskim, but tanois varayas be bringing proofs and arguments, talmudic analytical proofs, hine hatoisus chudashi aramban vaharashba vaharan, malayin tanois varayas, all of these previous commentaries are full of this analysis. The kol achas mehadeas of all of the different opinions. Who's going to be chutzpahdik enough to start bringing his own views now? He said, I'm going to do that. Who's going to stick his head between the mountains? You've heard this expression before? Who is going to stick his head between the mountains? This is a well-known expression. What does it mean? Meaning, I'm going to put my head between the mountains of the Gedolei Hapsak and get it smashed in the middle? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get involved in all of this, in being machriya the pesek. Okay, lachriya beinehem. Al pi tainus arise. I'm not going to start bringing proofs. Listo mashe biruru heim. To try and contradict what they clarified. Or lachriya b'mashe lo hichriyu heim. Or to try and paskin what they didn't paskin. Ki ba'avonoi seinu harabim, because for our many sins, katsame tasichleinu, our knowledge is worn thin. Lahavin divrehem, to understand them. Kol shekein lechachem aleihem, all the more so to try and be clever with them. We can't start arguing with them. But lo oida, not only that, ela she'afilu haya efshelanu lahadri drach derase. Even if we could start paskening between all of these things and start arguing with the Rishonim, lo haya ru lahachsik bam lefisha hi derech arucha biyose. It's a very long-winded process. So he says, I'm not going to do that. So what is he going to do? This is the radical part of the Shulchan Aruch. Ulechein. Fourth paragraph from the bottom. His kamti vadasi, I've now decided to do something different. Ki liyoshloshis amudi haora, the three pillars of psak. Asher habay space Israel, nish'an aleihim, which the whole house of Israel relies on. Bahoroseihem halohema, who are they? Harif, Baharambam, Baharosh. I'm going to take these three, and this is what he's going to do. Look carefully. I've decided in my mind the following: when two out of three agree on one particular psak, that's the halacha. What happened to everybody else? He listed 30 something people. What about their opinions? I'm leaving them out. I'm just taking the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. And when two out of three agree, that's the new halacha for Klal Yisrael. Unless I reach something where there's a general consensus amongst the Chachmei Yisrael, or Rubam, or most of them, chokim al dasahu, disagree with that psak. If there's a clear minhag, not like that, I'm not here to argue the clear minhag. But if there's no clear minhag, and let's face it, from what I said at the beginning, there wasn't a clear minhag in most places, because everyone was in a mess, because they was, you know, they were from all over the world. This is what we need. Rof, Rish, Rif, Rosh, Rambam, two out of three, that's the halach.
That's an Rambam basically the same.
Oh, so we'll see soon. That's one of the timers that was on the Shulchan Aruch, that the Rif and the Rambam, basically the same. The Rambam says he only disagreed with the Rif in 30-something occasions. Okay? So let's see the next paragraph. Makom she'echa minagoinim, minagimel, sorry. When one of the three Ha'amudim, with these three pillars, and Iskarim, loy gila data, didn't tell us what he thought, meaning, if I only know what two of them think, Okay? The Hashnei Amudim and Nisharim Cholkim Bedava, and the two that remain disagree. So what am I going to do then? I haven't got a majority of the Rifrosh Rambam. So then I'll start looking at other people. Hinei HaRamban, HaRashba, HaHaran, HaMordechai, HaSmag. Then I'll look around at them. Amochem HaShayyia, Shama Ruach, Ruach Elokeim, Kabi Kedishim, Lelechas Nelech. Okay, fine, we'll go with them. And we'll take it like that. Ubamokam, next paragraph. Shaloi Gila Dasa. Shum Echad Menagim Al Amudim. When there's no clear view on a particular issue by any of the three, which is very rare, there's nothing in the Rambam, there's nothing in the Rif, and there's nothing in the Rosh. Nifsa Kedivri Achachamim Ufrusamim. Then we'll look around for other Psak. Shikosvu Dasam Bedin Hahu. And we'll go try and work out from what exists outside of that. V'derech Sa Derech HaMelech. He says, I think this is a Derech HaMelech. What does it mean, Derech HaMelech? What's a Derech HaMelech?
The way of God.
No? Not God. Derech HaMelech. What's the Derech HaMelech? What's the word Derech HaMelech mean? The Derech HaMelech means the highway. That's what the Derech HaMelech means. I think this is the way to go. This is the new way to Pasken Halacha. Okay, Nechone, it's correct. Kroiva El Adas, Harim, Mifshal. To take away any kind of stumbling block. Rif, Rosh, Rambam. If you hit 3 out of 3, bonanza. It's like being in like Vegas. You get 3 cherries on the machine, the money pours out. Yeah? 2 out of 3, good enough for me. Achrei Rabim Lahatais, follow the majority, we'll go with that. 1 out of 3, we'll look around elsewhere, etc. And then the last thing he says, in the last paragraph, Im Ktsas Arzois Negu if there is a community which already says something in Osa, they have a minag where they don't do something. Even though we decide that it's mutter, they should stay with their minat. Because they've already accepted an isser on themselves. I'm not here to tell them that it's okay when their minag is to say it's osa. But by implication, he's clearly saying, but if there are communities where they do allow something, and I'm telling you it's osa, then you better fall in with the Shulchan Aruch, it's now osa. Meaning, I'm telling you that this is the psak for Klal Yisrael. If you're machmir, very nice, you can be machmir. But this is the psak. You can't be mekel, this is the new psak. Yeah.
What gives the Shulchan the right to just ignore all those other 27 and only choose 3?
Good. So, there are a few things that we need to ask on this. First of all, there were 3 reactions to the Shulchan Aruch, basically. One reaction was, this is fantastic. This is just what we needed. This is the best thing since sliced bread. This is the answer to the period, to the disruption, to the mass refugee crisis of Masora, etc., etc. This is the answer in Halacha. We'll have one sack for everybody. Other people turned around and said, this is fantastic, but it's a little bit Sfardi oriented. We'll see that in the Ramos soon, where the Ramos have some criticisms. And yet other people, and maybe even the majority of other people at the time, big poskim at the time, turned around and said, you could do this? How can you do this? No one disputed the status of the Rav Karo as being the Godel Hador. For sure. No one turned around and said, who are you? God forbid, Rav Yosef Karo was renowned as being the outstanding Godel Hador. But to do this, to take the idea of Achrei Rabim Lahatos, which is to follow the majority, which applies to a Sanhedrin of 71, where the majority is 36 people, to turn that into 3
who you've chosen,
albeit that, again, no one is going to argue with him that these 3 are the big 3. No one's going to turn around and say, oh, I think actually, the Sefer Trumas Hadeshin is bigger than the Rambam. However, there are sources that turn around and say that the Tosfos is bigger than the Rambam, in the Ashkenazi world, so maybe even there, yes. But how can you pick 3 and then say a majority is 2 out of 3? 2 out of 3 is very different to 36 out of 71. Very different. And you're going to say, that's the psak, and if you don't agree with it, you have to fall in line, unless you're machmir. Like, we'll see soon a whole lineup of major people from the time who turn around and said, this is not acceptable. And also the idea that you don't paskin halacha anymore from the Talmud. Halacha is meant to be paskin from the Talmud. And along comes the Shulchan Aruch and says, no, you can paskin from my book. Or did he say that? So we'll see that now. So, yes. Yes.
Did either communities nowadays that don't follow the Shulchan Aruch?
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Let's just talk, first of all, about the reactions to the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, in the 15 minutes that we have. The Ramah was much younger than Shulchan Aruch. Turn over to page 4. Jews had been living in Poland for a few hundred years already before the Ramah, and they were welcome there. There was already, by the time of the Ramah, an established Jewish community. Even Rabbonim, who began to, Rabbi Yaakov Pollock and others, Rabbi Shalom Shachner, who was a father-in-law of the Ramah. There was already a community in Poland. Who's just been to Poland here? So did you go to Krakow?
Yeah.
You went to the Ramah Shul in Krakow? So you saw the Ramah seat in the Ramah Shul in Krakow? Fine. So the Ramah was a very major character. He was young. He was much younger than Rabbi Yosef Karo. He was only in his 30s when Rabbi Yosef Karo was in his 50s, 60s. But he had exactly the same idea at exactly the same time. He realized that the Jews need a new psak which will fit everybody and bring everybody together. And he started working on his book, which was called the Darche Moshe. His name was Moshe, okay? On the Darche Moshe, at the same time as the Beis Yosef was working on his book. Of course, they didn't know that they were doing it. My understanding is, I saw this, I don't know if it's true or not, but that one of his students gave him a copy of the Beis Yosef as a present, as a gift. Said, look, we found this new sefer, you'll appreciate it, it's kind of the stuff you're into. And he starts reading it, and he realizes that the Beis Yosef has already achieved his life goal. Okay? And for a while, he was a bit distraught about this. That he's been working for years on something and somebody else has just done it. Not just anybody else, but Rav Yosef Karo, who is the undisputed God of Eretz Israel, or one of them anyway. So what did he do? So at first, as I said, he was rather upset. But then he had a brainwave and he said, you know something? Let me write to Rav Yosef Karo and see what happens. He wrote a letter to Rav Yosef Karo and he said, look, this work is incredible. It really is. It's so comprehensive. It's absolutely fantastic. Just what we wanted. But there are a few areas in which I disagree with the way you've done things. Have a look for a second on source number 3 on page 5. I need to go on because I'm not going to have time and I have a few other things, important things to do. Let's have a look here. Look at what he says. So he writes in his introduction, eventually he finished the Darche Moshe, and he writes his introduction the following. Ki yadua, she'arava machava Beit Yosef. Okay, b'tzibu ala gedoylem nechzer. According to these two or three witnesses. I'm going quickly because we've seen this. Whenever two out of three agree, okay. Lushara Vasa, Adire HaTorah, but the other rabbis, like Diel's asking, the greats in Torah, Lochashalem. He didn't really pay any attention. If he can get two out of three with a riff raff rambam, he ignores the rest. Rak b'makom gedolim, Amad, he's standing in the place of gedolim, l'seik halacha k'divrei shneim, to paskin these like two out of three. The afki hen kamai, and even though these are the earlier ones, let's face it, the riff, the rosh, and the rambam were early. The riff lived in the 11th century, the rosh in the 13th century, the rambam in between the 12th century. The Loi Basrai, they're not the later ones. We're now in the 16th century. Loi Chash Ledvarim HaShetzavchu by Kamai de Kamai. He didn't look at the psak of the earliest of the early ones, which is who? Halo HaRif. He says, if you look in the Rif, Shepasak Basai Peri Beis De Erevin, the Hiskibu Ima Rabim. Everyone agrees with this. He says, or most people agree with this. Lifsok Halacha B'chol Mokam Kebasrai. Listen to this, very important. We have a principle where later authorities disagree with earlier, we go with the later ones, not the earlier ones. People always think that the idea of Eurydice Adorus means that you go with the earlier people. That's not true. There are kind of layers. If you're in the same layer, if you're all Rishonim, whatever, as opposed to the Gemara, which is above it, so if you have a later authority, he takes precedence over an earlier authority. So he says, why is it that the Shulchan Aruch has gone with the 12th, 13th century authorities and has ignored the 14th, 15th century authorities, which are obviously relevant? Now, you might argue that there's almost a layer within a layer. I think I argued before that the Black Death may actually separate the Rishonim from something that comes slightly after the Rishonim so that they don't really feel that they're in the same league. But the Ramah says, no, I'm not so sure about that. Look at what he says now. Even the Rav can be overruled by the Talmud. But Ken Pasco Achronin Talmud, this is how people use the Paskin of Barosha, Maharik, the Rav Yosef Kalon, Mahari, but you were saying, etc. Ashabe Mehiru Kol Mesh, Mechoshech Vagilu Kol Talumos, Valide Zeh Dava, Sasar Kol Min Hagim. And this is one also not happy, he says, because the Shulchan Aruch has contradicted all the Min Hagim. Asher be'eloh ha-medinas. What about our minhagim? Meaning, the Ashkenazim had their own minhagim in psak, and in life. The Rosh, and the Rif, and the Rambam's psak cannot just override that. Asher rubam b'noyim ala klal hazeh. Most of our practice, he says, is based on this klal that we follow the later over the earlier. But she says, what's mean this? And we do this honestly. You can't argue with this. I don't want to argue with these later authorities, he says, and these minhagim. And therefore I've added, and he got permission from the Shulchan Aruch to do this. He says, do you mind if I add into your book, every now and then when I feel that the minhag of the Ashkenazim or the later authorities take precedence, do you mind if I include a few words, a word here, a word there, so we can have a dual book, a composite book together, and it'll be your psak and my psak. Because at the end of the day, he says, I think you're a bit Sephardi oriented, even though what you're doing is in principle fantastic. And the Shulchan Aruch wrote back to him and said to him, fine, do it, let's do it. Let's have a book together, which is an incredible, if you like, if you're covered for between the Rabbonim, they could have easily turned around and said, oh, this is my book, this is my book. He says, no, the last thing we need at this stage is two Shulchan Aruchs. Because that defeats the entire object. So they said, fine, we'll agree. And now, to this very day, the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sure you're aware, you've seen it, you've used it many times, appears in two fonts. It appears in either block and a Rashi script, or a bold and a non-bold script. You have the Ramah and you have the Shulchan Aruch. And the Ramah doesn't comment everywhere. I don't know what percentage, I'd be interested to see this, what percentage of the Shulchan Aruch is Rav Yosef Karo, what percentage is Rav Moshe Isserlis. It's definitely majority Rav Yosef Karo, whether it's 70-30, 80-20, something like that. It may just differ between which chelik you're in. So that's what I decided to do. I've written, and this is when I had an idea myself. I've made sure you know it's my idea, so that no one else explained for me, etc. But the Ramah basically said, if you can make this change, we're makabel. And that's what happened. And the Jewish world as a whole was makabel. The course of history over the last 400 years has broadly accepted the Shulchan Aruch. But at the time, I brought you now four or five major, major people from the 17th century and the 16th century. Who are those people? People that you need to know about. The Yamshel Shlomo from Shlomo Luria, who was in Poland at the time of the Ramah. Okay? The Maharal of Prague, who was in Prague at the same time as well. I don't know, he didn't get it. He didn't make it onto the who's who? Yeah, here he is, Maharal, yeah, in Prague. The Marashah, who was in Poland. Edels, Rav Shmuel Edels, the Bach, who was also in Poland. These people all came out and said, this is unacceptable. Have a look at some of the language is quite sharp. Let's just do this for 5 minutes, because I don't want to do this next time as well. Number four, and I'm giving the announcements today, so if we go over by 3 minutes, then everybody does. Look at number four. Says the Marashal like this, Ki Chadosh, the Karav Bal Yadein is safer. This new book has just arrived. The Chibur. She'asa Marena Harav Yosef Karo al Aturim. He's written this book on the Tur. V'harakam Chidushim b'Sfarim Tadmoinim. Sheloi Hayu b'Yadayim b'Yamim She'avru. We didn't have all of these Sfarim before. Yeah, printing. He's gathered them together, etc. U'Tshuvas Nachrius. He's brought all these unusual Tshuvas. The Chidushim Asher Nimtzu b'Chol Sfarim. But look, he said Dava. He didn't leave anything out. Mikol Asher Alav Machshav Lefanav Ukimat Sheloi Neich Makom Nitkadebo. It's almost as if he's left no more to say. You know, he's done such a good job. Aval Asa Psharas, but he's made compromises. He says, Binyane Piske Halachas Midasoi. What does Midasoi mean? For his own Misfaras Akeres. What's Misfaras Akeres? Where's your Keres? What's Misfaras Akeres? Boich kashes, like boich svaras, what they call in Yiddish boich svaras. Boich svaras means things that kind of gut feelings. Now, he's not suggesting that Rav Yosef Karo was not analytical, but he's saying at the end of the day, there's something a little bit arbitrary about the way that he's done this. But Rav Pamim be'isil v'hetzer, neged a Kabbalah, against Kabbalah, he doesn't mean mysticism, but against Dar Minag, like the Ramos said. He said he's saying it's stronger. Asher kibalnu v'nagu adeinu. And all the Talmidim love this new book. It's like the art scroll of the time. Everyone loves this new book, the Shulchan Aruch. They didn't realize how dangerous it is. He goes against the Tosfos many times. And the Poskim that we follow. People are making a big mistake, he said. They see that's what he wrote in his book. And what do they say? Amru, kach kosav hakaro lahedya. They come to me with a source and they say, I say, what's your source? He says, Shulchan Aruch. This is what Rav Yosef Karo writes. This is terrible, he says. Mashakasa Sefer Yamina, whatever's written in a book, they believe. You believe everything that's written in a book? How many times have people said to me, Rabbi, that's interesting, but where's that written? Okay, give me a pen. It's written here. Now, do you believe it? It's written down. He says, you can't have this.
He said,
I understand. It's not that they shouldn't believe him. He says, but how can that book be a proof of halacha against all the svarim of the Sfaras of the Rishonim?
Clearly, he got it. He sourced it from somewhere else.
Oh, no, but let's look. We sourced it from three people out of 30. Ve'im yamad echad chai. And if someone stands up for tzaveich and screams kakruk like a cockerel, she'ain hadin kain, that we don't pass gilad the shulchan aruch, but rias gemuras, and he brings proofs, or afilu bekabola, or he brings the masorah that we don't pass gilad that, lo yechish ledvarav, no one anymore pays any attention to this. Especially today, here's a sharp word. That for our many sins, the rabbis are many, but learned people are few. There's lots of guys wandering around with smichas today, but, you know, too quick to pass like a Shulchan Aruch. Therefore, they run and they grasp this sefer with all these new ideas. Now all the people are the same. Big ones, small ones, everyone has access to like a CD-ROM. You know, everyone can quote from everywhere because they can just press search and they know. So you don't know who's a real Talmud Chacham, who's not a Talmud Chacham. The Hanarim, the Zakenim, old people, young people, it's not right. Number five, it says, V'loisei HaDerech, this is not the way. V'loisei HaIru, this is not the method. Already from the days of the Talmud, ain't kabbal lisuk ke'echem en ha'goinim. We don't paskin like any one opinion. How do we paskin? Elamishich shur dvarav, someone who has the talent, liyosam yusadim amoifas choytech alpi Talmud Yerushalmi. You paskin from the Talmud Yerushalmi. You become a massive Talmud Chacham. You learn how to paskin halacha from the Gemara, and you paskin from the Gemara. So sefsa, etc., etc. But what you don't do is you don't go to kitzur svarim. You don't go to svarim which summarize things and say, this is the psak for Klal Yisrael. I brought you the same feeling on number in 6, 7, 8, and 9. We'll finish in a second. 6 is the Marashah. It says, V'doris halalu oisen shemoyrim halacha mitzach ha-shulchan aruch. People are these days passing for the shulchan aruch. Harayim ein yoidim tameni. They don't understand the reasons. They just know the halacha. They don't understand the background. They just didn't go through the process. The Bach says the same thing, and the Maharal, which I really advise you to look at some stage, in number 9, he says the following. He says, you know something? The purpose of halacha is to engage the intellect. Obviously not you and me, people who are not qualified in this, but if you want to be a poisek, you have to grapple with it. He said, you know something? He's going to say something radical. Look at the words I've underlined here. Ki yoseh roi, number 9, yoseh roi v'yoseh nachan, it would be better and more appropriate, she yoposek mitzvah Talmud, for people to pass you from the Gemara, af ki yesh lachush shelo yelech b'derech ha'emes, even if they get it wrong. It's better to pass you from the Talmud, using the process of psak, of intellectual analysis, and get it wrong. Again, not get it wrong if you're you and me, but if you're the world posek, if you're someone who can do this. The lo yasak hadin la'amitoi, and even if they don't pass in it, as it were, the ultimate or correct din, although that depends on what is multiple truths. Shitira hora lefi ha'emes. Mikol makam ein lechachem rak ma she'aseichel shaloi, noisen, umibein toichatam, umibein toichatam. So that Kodesh Baruch Hu prefers that we were to do the process of psak properly, rather than just pass him from kitzur svarim and try and take shortcuts. Now again, he actually says there that he thinks that these svarim of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch were not written for poiskim. They were written for you and me, so that we at least would be able to look something up on Shabbos afternoon. We'd know what to do. But when poiskim come along and start paskining like the Shulchan Aruch, because that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, he says then something's gone radically wrong. Now, who won this debate? Over time, it was clear that the Shulchan Aruch really caught on, especially in the Sephardi world. And Nadiva, your question before, which I'll finish with, which is, so are there any, maybe it was your question, maybe it wasn't your question, someone's question, your question, are there people today who don't follow the Shulchan Aruch? So the answer is, in the Sephardi world, very rarely. The Sephardi world is really connected with Maran Bet Yosef, very much accepted his methodology. In the Ashkenazi world, you still find, you found, certainly in the Vilna Gaon was not interested in being bound by the Shulchan Aruch. And even Adayom HaZeh, people like Rav Moshe Feinstein, who sometimes when presented with a psak in the Shulchan Aruch, are still willing to go back to the Rishonim, back to the Gemaras, and analyze it in the way that the Marashah and the Maharal and the Bach and the Marashah are talking about. So, just to conclude, the Shulchan Aruch was a bombshell. It was a revolution for all sorts of reasons, and its reception in the early days, in the 16th century, early 17th century, was muted. What we're going to do next time is we're going to look at the 18th century, the 17th, 18th century, and we're going to look at the whole massive disaster of Shabtai Tzvi, and you'll see that that very much led to a consolidation of thinking on this particular issue and really formed the Jewish world that we see today.
What are the
sheets that you gave? What's that? So on these sheets that I gave you, just so that you know at the end, this is the, like, the safer that's not a safer. You remember what I'm talking about? Where it's safer about the people. These are the four. Bring this with you next time. And you'll see, and I'll tell you next time what this is. These are the four chalakim of Shulchan Aruch and all the people around them in a standard set. Okay, let's stop now because we have to go upstairs.
You gave them out upstairs?
No, I gave them out down here. Did you not get one?
Two separate
sheets? Yeah, two separate.